What's up, guys? Welcome to Kind of Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, September 19th, 2018. I am your host, Tim Geddes, joined by the one and only Gary Whitta.
Whitta Wednesday.
Whitta Wednesday, baby. We got to do it. This is my first time back in a long time.
Is it really?
I've been in London. I've been in your hometown. Your hometown.
How was it? My ancestral home, yes. Born and raised.
Yeah.
Was it your first time?
First time over there.
How did you enjoy
Quite
it?
Quite the experience. Very nice people over there. There's a lot going on.
Yeah.
Everybody's really up on this tube thing. They're like, you got to take the tube.
You got to take the tube.
It's just a train.
The tube.
They say it funny.
Yeah.
No one understood me there.
No, they won't.
No, they were like, what the fuck are you saying?
Wait, really?
Yeah, no one. And I'm like, man.
When I go back home, it takes a couple of days for me to reacclimatize and for my accent
is reacclimatize to return. A word?
No, definitely not.
I don't know. I just made it up.
Reacclimate, I guess, is how you would say it.
Reacclimate is how you would say it.
It was fun, though. I missed this, though. I missed this table.
You missed the table?
I mean? Yeah.
And you missed me, too, right?
I miss you, too, for sure. I'm happy that this is the duo that we get to return with. And also with a great news day. A lot of fun stuff.
I know. I was just saying to you before the show, I typically feel like I get the short end of the stick here because on Wednesdays, I don't know. It's not a big day for game releases. It kind of feels like it's like almost like take out the trash day for gaming news. It's usually like not a lot happening, but today
there's
some good stuff.
Because usually Tuesdays we get the game releases,
right?
And Thursdays we get the Switch game releases. Wednesday it's kind of there.
But today though, I feel like there's some good content here,
and we're going to talk about it on this Kind of Funny Games Daily, ladies and gentlemen. You can watch this show live every weekday around noon on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. If you want to just watch the video, you can get it on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. If you want it as a podcast, just search for Kind of Funny Games Daily on your podcast service of choice. If you want to be part of the show, you can go to kindoffunny.com/KFGD, write in questions, try to squad up, do all that stuff. Or you are the guys that got to keep us honest for things that we get wrong during the show. Go to kindoffunny.com/you're wrong to write in. Let us know what we get wrong, and we'll read the corrections later on in the show. But for now, let's begin with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We got six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Thank you for that, Kevin. Also, we're brought to you by MeUndies and Loot Crate, but we'll tell you about that later. I wanted to start with the PlayStation Classic news, but you wanted to do something a little bit different.
You got
Nintendo Online on the mind.
So I'm definitely excited about the PlayStation Classic news. There's no doubt that's the top story.
It's the top story, but before we get to the top story, this is almost like a little aperitif. Yes.
Appetizer.
Yes, an appetizer to get into that. Joe Medforth writes in and says, "Hi, Tim and Gary. No, not 1 week since I wrote into Gary and Andrea to help explain the inability to play games you buy on the eShop on another Switch console. Nintendo has granted Gary's wish, but as is often the case with Nintendo, there's a catch. Because
the monkey's paw of Nintendo.
Because of the 6.0 Switch update, you can now log in using your profile on another person's Switch and download any games you bought from the eShop for them or yourself to play as a non-primary account. However, if the primary account user starts to play the same game on their own system simultaneously, it pauses the game on the other Switch, stopping the non-primary account from continuing to play."
Right.
Gary and Tim, what are your thoughts on this and how it compares to the way Sony and Microsoft handle their versions of game sharing? Thanks for all you guys do, and a wonderful Widow Wednesday to you both.
So I woke up this morning and my Twitter mentions were off the charts.
Which is usually a bad thing.
Yeah, it's never good.
Usually scary.
My initial reaction whenever I see like I've got like more than 50 mentions, and this morning I had like over 100.
Yeah,
I was like, did I tweet something last night? What have I done? Like, did I cross the line somehow?
Yeah.
Like some joke that I thought was funny at like 11 o'clock last night and this blew up overnight, and now I'm done with Twitter. Time to quit. It wasn't that, fortunately.
It was a good thing.
I feel like that day's coming.
Yeah, but eventually. Keep your eyes tuned to twitter.com/GaryWhitta.
I will fuck up direly eventually. But for right now, it was simply the fact that because I had expounded numerous times here on KFGD about wanting to be able to have the same account on more than one Switch so that you can play games simultaneously on them in our household. Nintendo had announced that you can. Now that was my big hope for the Nintendo Online, the 6.0 update.
Mm-hmm.
And they have, in fact, done that. And so it was basically a bunch of people going, very kindly, thank you, best friends. Hey, Gary, look, they gave you the thing that you wanted. And the only caveat is, you can't play the same game at the same time on two different consoles, mm-hmm. which is not going to be too much. For me, the problem was when the new Pokemon Let's Go game comes out, my yeah. kid is going to be obsessed with that and is going to want to be playing it a lot. So she's going to want the Switch, which means no Switch for me and my wife, which is no good. Mm-mm. So the plan was to buy her the Pokemon Switch, the new one.
Are you going to play Pokemon?
Am I going to play Pokemon? I mean, it depends on this new
one. Have you played Pokemon before?
I've tried over the years to get into it, and it's never quite. So I think the last one I bought was one of the 3DS titles. I tried. I thought, let's give this Pokemon thing a try. Mm-hmm. Couldn't get into it.
Okay.
And I played it when Pokemon Go first blew up.
Yeah.
I was walking around like everyone else, you know, catching Pokemon. Yeah. But it didn't stick.
I think this one's going to get you hooked with
this
with
one
your
daughter, might.
Because you get to play together.
Oh.
That'll be fun. You can do co-op.
See, that would be perfect. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad that they've added this feature. And I did download the firmware last night and had my first experience. So you get a 7-day free trial, and then it's what, $3.99 a month, which is pretty
Something
cheap.
Something like that. $20 a year. I think it's $35 for a family account of up to 8. So it gets pretty cheap.
What I saw was what I saw was 7 days free trial, and then your credit card gets charged $3.99 a month. Mm-hmm. And for that, you get your online play, which is kind of a trick
Slap
move because we got that anyway.
Mm-hmm.
It was quite sad. There was a story yesterday. It was the last day of free online play on Splatoon 2. And there were a lot of people in the little plaza, you know, where you can draw little messages and graffiti little messages to one another. There are a lot of people saying, bye guys, I'm done with Splatoon 2. I can't afford to pay for online.
There's nothing more sad than that.
I know. And there were some really horrible people in there going, ha ha, goodbye poor people and things like that.
Oh my God.
It was horrible.
What a world we live in.
It was horrible.
Fucking internet.
But there are a lot of people kind of saying goodbye because, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot of money to you and me, but there are people out there, plenty of people, that is an additional expense that they cannot justify. The argument was made, I believe it was Patrick Klepek over at Waypoint made the argument that they should have grandfathered in Splatoon 2 as a special case and made all the games going forward. Maybe architecturally, from a system point of view, it's difficult to do that. It's either free or it's not. But for whatever reason, there are a lot of people out there that were used to playing Splatoon 2 that now had to pay $4 a month.
Because Fortnite is still free. So some games.
Wait, Fortnite is still free now?
Yeah. Fortnite does not require an online connection. It requires an online connection.
It doesn't require Nintendo Switch online.
Yeah.
So I guess they could have done it. They chose not to. It's kind of sad. So to be able to say, okay, one of the things we offer you with Nintendo Switch Online is online play.
Yeah.
Again, is kind of a dick move because, well, we had that anyway for free. Mm-hmm. If you remember, pretty much every Xbox was always paid to play online. Xbox Live always had an extra fee. PlayStation used to be online, then they made you pay for it, and now Nintendo's done that as well. Well, you had it good for a while. But
it was
going
to be the plan from the beginning. It was supposed to be paid from the get-go, but they fucked that up for whatever reason.
Well, so the good times are over for people that enjoy free online. But
so you got it last night, and I
downloaded it last night, and I went straight to. So just so for people out there who aren't clear what you're going to do, when you download it, the NES library that is the big feature, what Ars Technica called Nesflix, which I thought was quite nice because it's this big a la carte library of games. It's not immediately, but I thought it would just pop up right in the UI immediately. It doesn't. You have to go to the eShop and download the app that has that Nintendo NES library in it. So you go grab that. It's a free download. You pay for you sign up for your 7-day trial or whatever. You have to put your credit card information in because it's going to auto, if you don't cancel within 7 days, it will auto, won't just elapse. It'll start charging you. Started playing it. I can't remember how many games there are, 20 odd games, all the classics, you know, Mario, Mario 3, Dr. Mario, Zelda, Excite Bike, Ghosts and Goblins, all your favorites. I can't remember Tecmo Bowl. I can't remember exactly how many there are,
20.
But it's very much the, very much similar experience to, you know, if you bought the NES Classic.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's an interesting point. I think that Nintendo are potentially somewhat cannibalizing their own market here. Like, why buy an NES Classic if you're going to get this through the Switch?
And also, this is so cheap.
It's super cheap.
So damn cheap when you really...
What is this?
Just get in there.
Just like, hit me up, find that vein.
Yeah, I need it, man. Give me more. I need Super Nintendo.
M64. So, you know, very soon... It is as advertised. We played, like, my kid and I played a little two-player Super Mario Brothers last night. It has some of the same options as the NES Classic. 4x3 or pixel. I'm not quite sure what the difference is between 4x3 and pixel perfect.
Pixel perfect is like how it used to look on the smaller CRT TVs.
Okay.
Just with modern stuff now, it's like it you're stretching the amount of pixels when it's in just.
But weren't old TVs 4x3 as
well? They were, but just because of the way that like resolution works and the size, the pixel perfect is exactly how many pixels Mario used to be.
Whereas
when it's bigger, they're adding pixels.
Okay.
Essentially.
Got it. Okay. And then they do add the this is, I don't know if people ever really do this, but they do add that phony CRT filter as well. Yeah. If you want the scan,
it's fun
lines.
To look at. But it's fun no to look at.
I would love to. The only way to do it is to play the game on a CRT. Mm-hmm. You can never really replicate that experience because the curvature
and the warmth of the tube.
And the the reflection in the curved glass
and
of the
sound
TV.
Of the static when you turn the TV on.
Oh yeah, turn into channel 3. They can never replicate that. Mm. That little the satisfying thunk as the dial went to channel 3.
Goes. The coaxial cable you have to turn in and it like kind of blisters your fingers because your dad tied it in too tight.
Yeah. Because you can never unthread it. So anyway, so far good. It's a good start. I'll be very interested. This does segue nicely into the next conversation about the PlayStation Classic. I'll be interested to see how much they grow it. 20 something games is a good place to start, but obviously they're going to have to grow from there, and they of course have the luxury of just a vast vast library, not just across the NES but the subsequent systems as well. I'm really hoping that it grows.
Me too.
And we'll get to a point where, you know how like when you go to Netflix now and you scroll, it just looks like literally an endless amount of content. Nintendo can get there. They can grow that. They have the library to get there. I hope they do.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think? Let's see what happens.
Yeah, I think they will. I think it's going to take forever, but I think that they will.
Do you think that there will be a steady rollout of growing the library?
I do. I mean, I've talked about this a lot on different shows. I know this might not be a popular opinion, but I stand by it. I think that the appeal of the Nintendo Switch Online service is this kind of virtual console replacement.
Right.
And the playing online, like that's great for Smash Brothers eventually when it comes out. And I know people like Splatoon. I'm not that big of an online player. So to me, it is kind of just looking at as a subscription service, and I'm more than willing to pay $20 a year to play all those NES games.
Yeah.
Not owning them all is kind of frustrating, and like how they're going to figure out like when they take some of those games off and replace it with others, that can get kind of weird. We'll have to see how that all goes when we get there, but I actually wish that the service cost more money, because that would give me more faith that they're going to add a large quantity of
games. You think because it's so cheap it's never going to be that great?
It's never going to be that great, and I can see them when Super Nintendo comes having like different tiers of online services, and that's going to piss a lot of people off,
right?
But I'd be totally down to pay $50 a month if it meant I got to play.
Oh, so like if you
Nintendo,
want access to
month,
the Super NES library as well, now there's another tier where it's like $4 or $5.99 a month maybe.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And that's the type of thing that I think...
Well, Netflix offers different tiers. That wouldn't be too far. It wouldn't be unprecedented.
Totally. And I think that that is the only way we're ever going to get GameCube games on the Switch. And if that's what it takes, I will gladly pay for that to get Smash Brothers Melee.
How do you think this will affect the hardware line that is now becoming established? They've got an NES Classic, a Super NES Classic, and you know we're waiting for Game Boy, we're waiting for
Nintendo N64
and GameCube to have classics.
There's a lot. The first couple stories of today's show all kind of blend together a bit with this question, but I feel like they all simultaneously serve different audiences and the same audience.
Right.
The NES Classic and all that stuff, those are as much collector items as they are used to actually
They're novelties.
Play.
People
They're
sometimes novelties. Buy them just to have them.
Exactly. So with all of that, this is just an additional service that most people that own Switches are going to use this if they're hardcore about playing games.
Right.
Because
it's
the only way they'll be able to play online. But also, this is the only way to play these games portably on the Switch. Right. And that, I think, has a lot more playability and functionality than the NES Classic, which is, for all intents and purposes, just a fun little novelty gimmick item, nostalgia trip. Right.
Yeah.
And I think that when it comes to PlayStation and all that, it's kind of a similar story where it's not a this or that. It's not like because there's the NES Classic, we're not going to see the games on the Switch. We're seeing that to be true now, right? Let's get into the PlayStation news.
Let's do the because the PlayStation is the new news.
The news.
Actual news.
This comes from the PlayStation blog. Today, we're excited to announce that we're bringing back the original PlayStation experience in a new miniaturized version, the PlayStation Classic. It really is crazy.
I want it!
The console will come preloaded with 20 classic titles, including fan favorites such as Final Fantasy VII, Jumping Flash, Ridge Racer Type 4, Tekken 3, and Wild Arms.
Tekken 3!
The mini console is approximately 45% smaller than the original PlayStation, and it emulates the original's look and feel by featuring similar controllers and packaging. Longtime fans will appreciate the nostalgia that comes with rediscovering the games they know and love, while gamers who might be new to the platform can enjoy the groundbreaking PlayStation console experience that started it all. All of the preloaded games will be playable in their original format. Available for pre-order at select retailers across the United States and Canada, each unit will also come with an HDMI cable to connect to the TV, a USB cable, and two controllers for local multiplayer with compatible titles. The controllers are not the DualShock, they're the original PlayStation controllers, so no analog sticks. PlayStation Classic will be available for $99 US on December 3rd, 2018, which is the original launch date.
You just blew my mind with a little bit of historical trivia there. I forgot the original PS1 controllers weren't DualShocks. They didn't have the analog sticks. Interesting.
That's what we're getting here.
Did the DualShock, remind me, did the DualShock come in at some point during the PlayStation 1, or was that a PlayStation 2 innovation?
Yeah, PS1. It came with the Ape Escape, which was only...
Oh, shit.
You could only play that with analog sticks.
Right, and then, right.
Yeah, games like Metal Gear Solid used them to great effect.
Right. Yeah. It's hard to imagine
it is
a time before thumbsticks.
And it's kind of a weird choice for them to do this, but I get it. It fits with what I was saying earlier about...
They probably have to do it to keep the price down as well.
I mean, the price isn't that down, is it? $100? That's pretty high.
Isn't that? But that's comparable with the NES and the SNES Classic, right?
No.
Isn't it?
NES was 60.
Was it?
Super Nintendo. Can you do a check, Kev? I think it was 80, though.
Yeah. I feel like once you're under that, once you're in under $100, though, for a lot of people, especially around Christmas time, that's viable.
Yeah.
It's like, NES, $60.
Okay, and what was the Super NES?
I believe it was 80 from our conversation earlier.
Okay, so this is definitely pricier.
Yeah, Lunar 83
is correct. 80.
Okay,
yeah, Lunar 83 writes in and says, "I have a couple issues about the PlayStation Classic. I feel it's a little overpriced, especially considering both Nintendo Classic consoles are under $100. Also, why would they use the Classic moniker? Thanks for all you do." Couple things. Let's start at the back of this. They'd use the Classic moniker because they've had PlayStation Classics has been a thing for years,
right?
On the PlayStation 3, PlayStation 4.
Yeah, Nintendo doesn't have a trademark on the word
and
Classic.
Also, it's clear what they're doing here. They're trying to cash in on the success that Nintendo had with the NES Classic and the SNES Classic.
Right.
And I think that's a very smart idea. $100, it's a lot of money, but I don't think that it crosses that line of being unacceptable. And I think it kind of adds up when you look at how the pricing of PlayStation 1 Classic games that we've seen on eShops as opposed to the pricing we see of Super Nintendo and Nintendo games on eShops. Usually those being the like $3 to $5 for NES and like $5 to $10 for Super Nintendo. PlayStation games are typically more in the $10 to $15 range for download. So when you add up 20 of those games, kind of starts to make sense, especially when there's two functional controllers coming with it.
Two controllers is one thing that caught my eye, because I believe that both the Nintendo Classics only came with one, isn't that right?
Super Nintendo came with two.
Oh, it did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, NES came with one.
So it's nice that they're including two.
It is. It definitely is.
And, you know, again, I don't know, I'm kind of, my elitism is showing here, but I didn't go, what, when I saw the price point. I thought, oh, okay, reasonable. You know, again, you're in that, it feels gifty. There's no accident that this is being released, what is it, 3rd of December, I think?
3rd of December, which is the anniversary of the PlayStation.
Oh, so you've got a nice little historical marker, but also prime time for Christmas gift giving as well. Yeah. It's the perfect gift.
I'm actually surprised that this is real. I'm as surprised this is real as I was that the Super Nintendo Classic is real.
You didn't think Sony would get in on this action?
It's totally obvious. Totally makes sense. I just thought that it was, it's surprising, especially with the PlayStation. The PlayStation has a lot more licensing issues to look at than the older systems, because that was the generation that introduced, in a real way, licensed music soundtracks and things like that.
Yeah.
And different like partnerships with like Pizza Hut or whatever in game that limits the ways that the games could be sold. Final Fantasy VIII is a good example. Like a big reason that that's not one of those games that's constantly being re-released is there's licensing issues of things in that game.
Right.
So we see 7, we see 9, we see 10. We don't see 8 though. Patrick writes in and says, "Hi, Kind of Funny Host. Today I saw that PlayStation announced their PS1 Classic, and boy was I disappointed. Even if it's cool, it's not what I want. I'll probably still buy it. And I don't think it's what we need. I don't want to be negative, but PlayStation is a great library of games, and instead of just giving us 20 games, we need backwards compatibility, especially when one of the games on the Classic is Final Fantasy VII, which is already available on PS4, Vita, and soon on Xbox and Switch. Would you rather have backwards compatibility or the Classic? But since it's the Classic that we'll get, do you think it will support trophies?" I do not think it'll support trophies. Like, no. I think that's not a chance.
No.
That would be cool, though. Way too much work. It'd be very, very cool.
They would have to make it online, mm-hmm. right? You'd have to put some kind of a Wi-Fi chip in there.
Yeah.
You'd have to do quite a few things.
Yeah, I don't think that'll happen.
It's a nice idea, but no.
Would I rather have backwards compatibility or the classic? I'd rather backwards compatibility. But I think this is one of those things, going back to what I was saying earlier, it's not an either or. Them making this is not going to stop them from doing PlayStation Classics. They haven't done PlayStation Classics, and that's odd and that's weird.
Yeah.
But I think that hints more at a PlayStation 5, Xbox Game Pass type service that is backwards compatible, where they do go all in, similar to what Nintendo's hinting at now, starting
when you
to
say,
build.
When you say backwards compatibility, are you talking about taking an original old PlayStation 1 disc that will work in the system, or are you talking about NES flicks, something.
Both.
Okay,
it's both. So similar to how Xbox does it, where with the Xbox One, you can put in the original Xbox disc and play Crimson Skies, or you can just buy and download Crimson Skies from the marketplace, whatever it's called on Xbox.
Right, and you, like you said, it's not an either or. Nintendo's showing that you can do both.
Yep, it's a little upsetting that PlayStation doesn't offer PS1 classics on PlayStation 4.
I'm kind of surprised they haven't got to that yet.
Yeah, it's weird. But them doing this, I do think it is just a nostalgia trip, them trying to hit the holidays with another product out there. I do not think this will have the success levels of the NES or Super Nintendo in terms of sales.
Doesn't have quite the same nostalgia factor.
But I don't think they need to. Like, this thing is going to be a hit. This thing is
This will be hard to find over the Christmas period. You'll see a lot of empty spaces at Target where they've all been bought.
This thing's going to sell very well. I think that we're going to see a PlayStation 2 classic at some point, and that's pretty cool.
It makes me feel old. The NES classic and the Super NES, I get it. I'm also aware of the fact that I've called these everything on the show. I've called it the SNES, the Super NES, the Super NES.
Yeah, I'm glad that you've come around to the correct way to say it.
What's the correct way?
SNES.
SNES? That's such a mouthful.
Hell yeah.
Super NES.
It rolls though, dude.
Super NES.
Let's have fun, man. Join the party in your mouth.
Oh my goodness. It makes me feel a little bit old because the Nintendo and Super Nintendo, I totally think of those as retro systems. Those are the systems that were around when I was a kid growing up. The PlayStation, I was already well into my adult years by the time the PlayStation 1 came out. I don't consider, as someone who was born in the year that the original Pong came out, I don't consider the PlayStation to be a retro system. Younger gamers do, but I consider that much more a part of the modern era. So the fact that there's now it's now considered vintage, and then there's a PlayStation Classic, makes me, I'm feeling my age a little bit today.
PlayStation is definitely at this point a retro console.
It is.
And like for me growing up, I was born in 89, so the PlayStation was one of those systems that I didn't have when it was out.
Right.
Like that was one that I got later down the line, like way late into its years.
Right.
When it was dirt cheap.
Right. So you would have been about what, like 11 or 12 when the PlayStation came out?
I mean, not even. Like,
when did the PlayStation 1 come out?
94. So I was 5.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Like
I was really.
Oh, I'm thinking of PlayStation 2. That's right.
That was 2000. So I was around 11 then.
Yeah.
PlayStation 2, that's the one I actually bought it. You know, I bought it I bought it in its first year.
Y'all are babies.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Seriously.
But it's cool to see, and you know, this isn't the first time we're seeing this, but PlayStation now has history. It's
Of course.
Nintendo's no longer the only company that has this like lineage of characters and IP.
No, it's great that the PlayStation is now a mature enough thing that this doesn't seem premature, right? To go back to the beginning. It's been long enough that this now feels vintage. I'm just saying it makes me feel old.
Yeah. It's cool. It's exciting. And I definitely want one. It's one of those things where it's like, I want it just because I want it. Just because it's a cool.
Well, it's almost like an Apple thing. There's a lot of, they'll sell a lot of consoles to people like Patrick who say, I don't understand why this exists. I don't think it's what we need. I will probably buy it.
Totally. Yeah. It is funny though, because in terms of the console being retro, PlayStation 1 is probably going to be the system that ages worst.
Well, that's a point I wanted to make, is that unlike the NES and the Super NES, where I think the games have aged quite well.
I think NES is a mixed bag with that.
I think of PlayStation 1 and N64 as a dark age of video games. The games are a big, fuzzy, First attempt to kind of venture into 3D.
It's the puberty of but the video technology. Game consoles.
It's a very awkward puberty as well.
Yeah,
like it's like every like it's, the games are growing hairs in weird places and having all these strange emotions
and sharp at the same time.
And they don't quite know what to do with themselves. Yeah. They're all these jaggies.
Yeah.
And but it also looks strangely fuzzy and kind of weird looking. The games, I watched the little announcement video today. I was looking at Tekken.
Mm-hmm.
It has not aged well. No. Because it's not old enough to go, oh, I get it. That's retro. That's like the 8-bit or 16-bit style. That's what games looked like back then. They were 2D. They were blocky. And that now has an aesthetic which is still appealing to us today. That's why so many games like Dead Cells... Mm-hmm. Are still kind of reaching back for that aesthetic because it's pleasing to us. No one's trying to recreate the look of the PlayStation 1 or the N64 because those games look shit now. They look terrible.
I watched the announcement trailer and there was a fun to it for me. You're right. They look horrible. But seeing Tekken and seeing Ridge Racer, I was like, I'm excited to get my hands on these for 5 minutes and then put it down.
That's what it'll be. And again, for me, it doesn't. It's too new to have that nostalgia itch. But for people in their 30s, people of your age, who, for whom that might have been their first experience of video game. That's their NES.
Oh, yeah,
and
totally.
And that's their moment of like, oh, my God, the nostalgia is so strong that it doesn't matter that the graphics are fuzzy and shitty looking.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's going to be a huge success with people in that age range. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
Are you happy with the games that are announced, and what would you want to see rounding
Very
out the
much
list?
So, Abigail writes in and says, in light of the news of PlayStation Classic having controllers without analog sticks, I tried to see if there were any PS1 games that couldn't be on the Classic. I only found Ape Escape to require dual analog. Are there any others you can think of? Or are there any other games that would be harder or disappointing to play without dual analog? I think that Ape Escape is the only game that requires it. I could be wrong. Let us know. kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. But are so there any games that would be harder or disappointing to play without it? Definitely.
Wait, Metal did they release a DualShock controller on the PlayStation 1 just for Ape Escape?
No. That required it,
right?
But you could use it with Metal Gear Solid. You could use it with a ton of different games.
But you could also play those games without... Yeah. Thumbsticks.
Like if I remember correctly, you could like Crash Bandicoot 1 came out before the DualShock, so you couldn't use analog even retroactively.
We're deep in the you're wrong weeds right now. Yeah. We're gonna be hearing from best friends on this one.
But Crash 2 and 3, you could use the analog stick because they came out later after that existed.
So this and obviously Final Fantasy 7 is a classic. Ridge Racer 7 is a classic.
Ridge Racer 4 is great. Tekken 3 is amazing.
One of
Kevin's favorite games. Wild Arms, an amazing RPG. Like this, and Jumping Flash is...
Jumping Flash, I don't know.
A game I've never played. It is the first 3D platformer on console. So it predated Mario 64.
Mario 64, okay.
And it's ugly as sin.
Yeah, is it like a Bubsy kind of situation?
It's even worse.
Oh
my
God.
It's really bad.
That's hard to imagine.
But I mean, I've never played it. I've just seen it and the way people have talked about it. That's a perfect example of, I think it was a launch title. That's a perfect example of a game that I'm excited to try. You know,
right.
Like that's history. That is, you know, going back and being like, wow, this is where PlayStation started going down a path of what a 3D platformer could be. And then eventually they had Crash, which was their answer to all that. So this is, I think, a good start. This is 1/4 of the catalog that they're going to have on
Crash
the system.
Crash needs to be on here, doesn't it?
So that's where we get into weird territory because it does. It needs to be there. But with the remasters and re-releases,
licensing issues.
Licensing, I think they're going to be okay with. They figured all that stuff out. I imagine we will get Crash, but I don't know how many of them. I imagine we will get Spyro, but I don't know how many of them. And that's where the PlayStation's library gets kind of interesting, like I was saying, with a lot of licensing stuff. But if we're getting Final Fantasy VII... I kind of doubt we're going to get Final Fantasy IX on there. And we're going to get, I imagine, Siphon Filter.
Hell
but
yeah.
Not all of them. Like when you're limited to 20 titles, I think there's going to be a lot more franchise representation than we see on the NES Classic.
What's a title that when they announce the final 20, it's not on there, people are going to say, well, how can you call it a PlayStation Classic?
Metal Gear Solid.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's going to be tough though, right? You think they can do that?
I think they can. I think they'll figure it out.
Okay.
I mean, they better. Like, if Metal Gear Solid's not on this, that's going to be a big, big, glaring omission.
They can, I mean, you know, obviously there's not a lot of time now between now and release. And at this point, obviously, the games list is probably set for a December release. I mean, these things are going to have to go into manufacturing soon, if not now.
Yeah.
So they know what the 20 games are. They could do, if they're smart, they'll do this like a little bit of Smash Brothers, like kind of leak it out. Like, here's another game.
They'll probably do it like 5 at a time over the next couple of weeks.
Yeah. For me, it'll be Parappa.
We're going to get Parappa. I think that's a safe bet. We'll get a Jet Moto. We'll get a Wipeout. I'm hoping we get Twisted Metal, too. Fucking Kevin. But the problem is, will we get a Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game? Oh, I kind of doubt it.
Well, they would have to make those deals.
The licensed music, I think, is going to cause a lot of issues there. But
right.
It'd be so exciting if we got Tony Hawk 1 or especially 2.
What I would love, and this is a pipe dream, this would never happen, but I would love it if they would put a Wi-Fi chip in there so that you could connect online and maybe there was the opportunity to download packs and get more games down the road. No, it's going to be a sealed box.
Yeah.
The only way that that's going to change, and this is an interesting question, is if you remember with the Nintendo consoles, the classics, people modded those in really interesting ways.
Yeah.
Like I have a friend who's a hacker, and he took my Super NES Classic and modded it and put my NES Classic and put a bunch of other shit on it.
Yeah.
And now I've got a bunch of other shit.
It's going to be interesting with PlayStation, though, because unlike Nintendo and Super Nintendo, which are super tiny ROMs.
Yeah, PlayStation ROMs are much bigger.
They were CDs.
That was brought up today.
There was a lot of cinematics and music files on it that can really bump up the file size.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how much RAM is on this thing and how much reserve is in there. If I don't think there's no SD card there's a USB drive, so maybe you can mod it, stick a USB stick in there.
We'll see. They'll figure
something
out. We'll
see. But I'll be interested to see what the mod community does with it, because they always do something.
Yeah. I mean, it's exciting. At the end of the day, it's like, this is a very cool thing, and I hope that we see
it's going to be fun
stuff.
Just to turn it on and hear that original PlayStation logo.
And then a follow-up story that is semi-similar to this. Sega delays the Mega Drive and Genesis Mini to 2019. This comes from Michael McWhorter at Polygon. Sega has delayed the release of its Mega Drive Mini console, which the company announced back in April, to next year. While the push to 2019 may sound like bad news, Sega will miss the 16-bit console's 30th anniversary in Japan due to the change in date. It sounds like Sega's doing the right thing by its classic console. Sega's now aiming for a global worldwide release of the Mega Drive Mini in Japan and Europe, as well as a Sega Genesis Mini in North America, according to a pair of tweets from Sega's official Japanese Twitter account. In better news, Sega also said it's now working with a domestic Japanese software developer with a proven track record. Previously, Sega had announced it was working with AtGames, the company behind the Sega Genesis Flashback console, which was something of a disappointment to retro game enthusiasts. It's not clear yet what relationship Sega and AtGames will have, if any, on the project. While details are scarce, hopefully this means improved emulation and a more authentic miniature console that plays its classic Mega Drive and Genesis games better than what Sega and its partners have delivered in the past.
Now, I bought that Flashback console.
Oh, I'm sorry.
When it came out.
Yeah.
I saw it at, I think it was like at a Walgreens. You know how they have that shit at Walgreens now, just on the rack?
Yeah.
And it was $50, Genesis, Flash. You see these Atari, I think they're up to like 8 or 9 Flashback Ataris now. And you see these other ones.
No, it's had the shitty controllers with the turbo buttons on them, all this unnecessary
cheap-ass
bullshit.
Controllers. I bought, because again, it was an impulse buy. It was like $50, whatever. I think it had Streets of Rage alone. Was like, I'll get it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was crap.
Yeah.
It was really, really cheaply. I mean, it basically worked as advertised. It had the games on it that it said it had.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, you could tell that it was cheap ass plastic. It was flimsy.
Yeah.
It didn't have that. It didn't have a good UI. The games basically worked, but they were kind of poorly emulated. I'm glad that we will now, though delayed, see a version of that, which hopefully is more authentic and more respectful to the lineage of Sega than the Flashback version was.
Yep. Totally agree. Stay tuned for more. Next story, Red Dead Online info has been revealed by Rockstar. Today, we're excited to announce Red Dead Online, a new online connected experience set against the backdrop of Red Dead Redemption 2, enormous open world. Red Dead Online is an evolution of the classic multiplayer experience in the original Red Dead. Blending narrative with competitive and cooperative gameplay in fun new ways. Using the gameplay of the upcoming Red Dead 2 as a foundation, Red Dead Online will be ready to be explored online or with friends and will also feature constant updates and adjustments to grow and evolve this experience for all players. Red Dead's planned for launch in November 2018, initially as a public beta, with more news to come soon. As with most online experiences of this size and scale, there will inevitably be some turbulence at launch. We look forward to working with our amazing and dedicated community to share ideas, help us fix teething problems, and work with us to help develop Red Dead Online into something really fun and innovative. Access to Red Dead Online is free to anyone with a copy of Red Dead 2 on either PlayStation 4 or Xbox One. I think it's great they're already getting ahead of it. Just like,
it's nice. It's refreshing to hear them say, yes, there will be problems, because there always are. Why not admit it?
Yeah, so that's great. John Ryan from IGN did an interview with the Rockstar team and asked Imran Saward, the director of design at Rockstar, what the reasoning behind the online not launching with the game is. And he says there are a few reasons for this. The first is that even though Red Dead Redemption 2 and Red Dead Online share the same gameplay mechanics and geography, we see them essentially as separate products that will grow and evolve independently of each other. We love story-based single-player games, and they are the foundation of everything we do. Red Dead Redemption 2 is an absolutely massive story-based game that we hope people will be lost in for a long time, and we wanted people to experience everything that the world has to offer before we build on that with the online experience. Not to mention, playing through the story and getting to know the controls and mechanics of the game is the best way to get ready for playing inside the world of Red Dead Online. Also, as we have learned from experience when launching online games at this scale, there are bound to be a few issues, and we want to ensure that we have time to gradually roll out the game and make the experience as smooth as possible for everyone. We believe the way that this way of rolling out will give people the best overall experiences with both single and multiplayer. According to Rockstar's senior producer in the San Diego office, Josh Needleman, Red Dead Online will combine the team's favorite elements from Grand Theft Auto Online with all of the elements we liked from the old Red Dead Redemption multiplayer.
I mean, my life is over, basically. I mean, this is it for me.
This is it?
This is what I'm going to do now. Oh, this is the rest of my life.
Getting those boots on, putting the hat on, getting not wearing anything on, else.
Getting the boots on, shaking the dust out of my boots,
yeah,
and going wrestling. Rustling some cattle mm-hmm. with Jared and, mm-hmm. and you guys. It's going to be great. It's going to be wonderful.
Are you excited for this online?
Oh, I mean, that's what I'm talking about. I already felt like the game alone, the single player game alone, I was like, yeah, I'm all in. Because I remember how I was all in with the original Red Dead, how I've been with the GTAs in the past. Mm-hmm. And I was hoping, I'm sure you can go find a clip of probably me and Jared either here or on Red Dead Radio talking about how, please God, let them do what they do with GTA, which is this incredibly robust long tail of content, really well supported content, just constantly new heists, missions, new vehicles, just new stuff all the time, constantly. Grand Theft Auto Online mm-hmm. is just this massive ecosystem all to its own now. I really, really had hope that they would do something similar to that with Red Dead Online, and here it is. Couldn't be happier.
Yeah, exciting stuff. I'm sure more will come soon for that. And the game comes very soon, October 26th.
Oh, God, I'm sorry. I just got to finish. I got to be done with Spidey in time. I will be.
Okay, good.
I'm at like 70-something percent with Spidey right now. I don't think I'm going to platinum it because I'm not obsessive like that.
Yeah.
But I will. I'll come close.
Yeah, I'll come close. I'm at the point now where I'm just getting the collectibles and stuff, and I'm not going to get all of them because I don't really like doing the whole the gang hideouts. The fighting gets a little repetitive.
Oh, but no, I love it. The combat for me, I don't like is the challenges and the things that feel like chores, like go look at 10 fish.
Mm.
That feels a little bit grindy to me. Mm. Or go catch, 20 of the catching the pigeons and stuff is not a ton of fun for me, but I'll get as much of it done as I can. And that's really probably the last game that I'll play seriously before this comes out, and then all bets are off.
Exciting times.
Oh, my God.
Next news story. This comes from THQ Nordic. Can't stop, won't stop, apparently. THQ Nordic acquires even more properties.
Chill out, dude.
We're happy to announce that THQ Nordic has acquired the IPs for Alone in the Dark, a Lovecraftian survival horror game series, and Act of War, a real-time strategy game featuring a story by NYT best-selling author Dale Brown from Atari.
They've been on a shopping spree, haven't they, these guys?
They're just getting them all up. I don't know what the plan is. This seems weird. This seems like they don't have enough resources.
Yeah, how can they exploit all of these IPs that they've bought? How can they possibly develop
everything? And a lot of their deals don't even include the like original games and being able to re-release them. So I don't know what the strategy is here.
What was it they bought recently?
Kingdoms of Amalur,
yeah.
Time Splitters.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
So they have all this stuff. What are they going to do? I mean, I'm excited about it. I mean, I'd be excited to see Alone in the Dark come back. Act of War, I don't know, but Alone in the Dark's always been a favorite of mine.
Yeah.
Interesting to see that come back in some form.
Mm. Great movie.
So we'll see. Great movie. Oh, yeah.
It's really
a classic.
Movie. Really, really bad movie. I'm interested to see how this progresses. I wonder what's going to end up happening with all this, if anything, or if they're just going to keep buying and buying and buying.
Maybe that's just maybe they're just becoming like an IP hoarder, and then they'll just sell them off again.
Sell the whole company to someone else?
Well, who knows?
Interesting. Next news story, Death Stranding featuring iconic MGS voice actors. This comes from Katri Marcel at VGR.com. Kojima himself revealed a few more voice actors to be included in the Japanese version of the game. Kenjiro Suda, famous Japanese voice actor of Seto Kaiba from Yu-Gi-Oh! Hell yeah. Activate my trap card. Akio Otsuka, the Japanese voice of Solid Snake and Big Boss from the Metal Gear Solid series. Kikoko Inu, the voice actor for the Japanese version of The Boss and Rosemary in the same series. Nanz Mizuki, the girl from the Japanese Paz Ortega in Metal Gear Solid. And Satoshi Mikami, famous actor who voice acted as the Japanese Ocelot in Metal Gear Solid 5, The Phantom Pain. Cool stuff. Very excited to see more of Death Stranding. Wonder what the fuck it's actually going to be.
Nobody knows what it's going to be, do they?
Not really. We got
it's
a little.
They
showed
secrecy.
Some stuff at E3, but it's still leaving a lot of questions.
Yeah.
But the casts are getting together. Very high quality stuff.
Yeah, and I'm liking the kind of the Japanese voice cast as well.
Yes.
It's going to have this cool feel to it, I think.
Very excited for it. And then final news story of the day. This one's a sad one. Capcom Vancouver closes. This comes from Allegra Frank at Polygon. Capcom Vancouver, the developer best known for the Dead Rising franchise, has closed its doors. An announcement on Twitter last night confirmed that after more than a decade, the studio is no longer active. Quote, "We're sad to announce that effective today, Capcom Vancouver has suspended operations. We want to express our deepest thanks to our team and fans for all of your support." GameIndustry.biz received a statement from Capcom itself that all of the in-progress projects at Vancouver have been canceled as part of the closure. All staff, 158 people in total, have been laid off as well. The shutdown will result in a $40 million loss for Capcom, according to a note to investors. Capcom will instead redouble its efforts toward developing games in Japan, where the company's teams have had major success over the last year, especially thanks to a little game called Monster Hunter World, which has set huge sales records for the company. Over the years, Capcom Vancouver struggled to maintain its footing. The most recent game developed by the studio was Puzzle Fighter for Mobile, which was no monster hit. The free-to-play title shut down mere months after it hit app stores. Prior to that, it launched Dead Rising 4 in 2016 to lukewarm reviews. What this all means for Dead Rising is one of the biggest remaining questions. A sequel is reportedly in the works, but for now, it sounds like the zombie franchise may have been put to rest alongside the studio.
Yeah, I was going to say, obviously I'm very, very sad about 158 people. What do you think it means for Dead Rising? Do you think Dead Rising is done?
I think it's done for now. I feel the franchise kind of never stopped. It just like kept coming out and coming out, and it hit a point where there was a saturation not only of zombie games, but of Dead Rising games. And I feel like they weren't special anymore. The last time we saw it, like, launched alongside the Xbox One to kind of
I felt like they kind of, you know, it's weird though, because if you remember, when the Xbox One came out, it was a launch title. You know, the Xbox always held it up as like, here's one of our big, you know, exclusive
franchises.
Yeah. And now it's, you know, one, you know, Xbox is already struggling to say, look, we have these things at a time when there are, when Sony is killing it with Spider-Man and, mm-hmm. you know, all these other exclusive titles that make you want a PlayStation. You got to ask yourself, well, what does Xbox have that makes me want an Xbox?
Yeah.
And they don't have a ton of stuff, but Dead Rising was one of the things that you can only play it here. That's gone. I felt like the one thing that Dead Rising did do to differentiate itself from all the others, and this is maybe part of the argument, is there's so many other zombie games out there right now, it's hard to mm-hmm. distinguish yourself. I feel like the one thing that they did do is at least, you know, it had that more tongue-in-cheek tone.
It was fun.
Yeah, it was more fun.
Light-hearted,
funny.
Arcade-y.
Not everything has to be State of Decay, Days Gone, mm-hmm. It's like that super grim Walking Dead. You know, this isn't that fun kind of vibe. At least Dead Rising made it fun. I'm sad to see it go, and I hope that that the 150 plus people that got laid off will land on their feet. I mean, that's really the crux of the story here is a lot of people out of work, which is always super sad.
Definitely very sad. I imagine that we'll see Dead Rising again, but it might not be for...
You might need to lay fallow for a while, you think?
Yeah, it might not be for a very long time. But if I want to know what games were coming out to the mom and pop shops today, Gary, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah.
Felt like you could have given that a bit more.
I could have. You know what I mean? I'm still working out. I'm back on the show tomorrow. I'll bring the heat then. Out today, Hover on Xbox One, League of Evil on Xbox One, and Siegecraft Commander on Switch.
Do we know anything about any of those games?
No.
You want to pull one of them up, Kevin?
I'm good.
Pull up League of Evil.
Let's take a look at League of Evil.
Let's check it out.
When I don't know what any of the games are, I always think it's worth like a quick 30 seconds just to examine a trailer and see what we're talking about. Hover, I don't know what... Sometimes it's fun to guess. What do you think Hover is?
Hover is...
League of Evil or Hover?
Let's do League of Evil.
Let's do League of Evil.
Because we asked for that
one
first.
Okay.
Yeah. Hover, I imagine, is... Hover. I don't know. A shitty platformer.
My guess is like some kind of puzzle platform type thing that has like a hover mechanic at its central core.
League of Evil.
Man, I'm having trouble finding it, guys.
Really? You can't find anything on League of Evil?
I mean, I just... any of these look right to you?
No.
This game. You know what? That is not a good sign for your game. When your game is out today, and when you Google the title of the game and the platform, nothing comes up. Well, there's League of Evil on the Switch.
Yeah, but like that doesn't feel right.
League of Evil, the trailer, PS4, PS Vita. Yeah.
Do we have this right? Yeah, that's the same game. Oh, it's okay, so it's an 8-bit. All right,
so here we go. Show the people.
All right.
All right.
Okay, so it's a cutesy little platformer.
Looks kind of hard.
Can we look at Hover real quick? Because I want to know the answer to that question. Now I must know.
League of Evil kind of looks like old PC platformer games. Like Windows 95 era.
Yeah. Like old, like it's something you'd get on shareware.
Yeah.
Oh, wait. Is it a Wipeout kind of deal?
Oh, shit. Hover looks kind of fucking cool.
Hold on. What is this now? Hover, Revolt of Gamers.
Shit. It's like Jet.
Is it like Jet Grind Radio?
Jet Grind Radio.
What are we looking at here?
The Revolt of Gamers.
9 playable characters. It has a Jet Set Radio feel to it, right?
Third person or first person. This looks pretty damn cool.
How did this get under the radar?
It's probably not good.
Yeah, maybe it's crap, but maybe it's not.
Yeah, someone should give it a try.
It obviously owes a huge debt to Jet Set Radio.
Man,
that's a game. That's a franchise that needs to come back. Yeah, would you get excited if they announced a new one?
I would, but I don't think it needs to come
back. There's a lot of fondness out there for it.
Those are classics, but like I don't think they're gonna age well in a modern world. You know what I mean?
But a modern version of it could be great.
I don't know.
You're not excited about that?
I don't think there's enough there.
Oh, but the music was great.
Amazing. Yes. Bring back the originals. I'm down for that.
All right. So again, another not a stellar day for game releases.
It's time for reader mail, but let me tell you, this reader mail is brought to you by Me Undies. I love Me Undies, wearing them right now. They got special Star Wars ones.
I just noticed that Star Wars Me Undies. Yeah,
you should get some of those. They're very nice.
Maybe I can get some free ones now.
Maybe I don't know how
that
works.
I don't know. We'll see. I'm good at getting free stuff.
They are fantastic. They use a micromodel fabric, which is a full 3 times softer than regular cotton. I can attest to that. I love them very, very, very much. They're the only underwear that I wear. I'm wearing a MeUndies shirt right now, actually. This is a MeUndies shirt.
It's soft. I'm trying not to touch you. No. Just touch the shirt.
Okay, give a little touch.
It's and it's like the same microfiber stuff. I got MeUndies socks. I'm wearing those. I'm all MeUndies out right now.
Doesn't aggravate your nips? Because problem. No. That's always what I hate.
They're treating them boys right.
Okay,
right?
Good.
Things
I'm glad.
Are good there.
Them boys.
MeUndies just launched.
Them boys.
MeUndies just launched a brand new membership. You can level up your top drawer with new MeUndies each month. Members gain access to exclusive prints that no one else can get. They get special member pricing on every product MeUndies makes. And you can switch styles or skip any month that you want. To get your 15% off the first pair, free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee, go to MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. That's MeUndies.com/gamesdaily. Do it. You will not regret it. It's totally worth it. And also, this episode's brought to you by Loot Crate. What was the last loot gaming you received? What was in it? And what did you love? Here's the thing. Loot Box, long storied history with us are kind of funny. They send us it all the time. My brother loves it. His desk is just covered in all of this Loot Crate stuff. Right, Kev?
Yep.
Do you love it?
I really do.
You love the t-shirts?
Yeah.
Yeah? What's your favorite thing about the Loot Gaming?
The Loot Gaming?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't prepared for that question. I was ready to tell you about another thing that I got. I got the little Futurama ship. It's like a miniature of the ship.
Uh-huh.
So cool. It's sitting at my desk right now.
You can get a surprise assortment of official exclusive gear collectibles featuring Marvel, Spider-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog, Doom, and Metal Gear Solid. What is Loot Gaming? It's a monthly subscription box delivered direct to your door with exclusive video game collectibles, apparel, and gear. Loot Gaming curates and designs everything themselves. You can't find these items anywhere else, no matter what you geek out about. This one's for you. Over 30 million crates sold. Loot Gaming Crate is a curated collection of items from the best video game franchises. The September crate has 4 incredible franchises, including Spider-Man, Sonic the Hedgehog, Doom, and Metal Gear. Guaranteed t-shirt in every crate. Loot Gaming packs $60 of value in each crate for less than $30 a month. You can't lose. Loot Gaming also offers 16 other awesome crates from WWE to anime. Subscribe now and give yourself a birthday present every month. This crate will sell out. You only have until Thursday, September 27th at 9 p.m. to guarantee your order, or this crate will be gone forever. Get the best surprises each month from the largest geek and gaming subscription company, Geek Out in Style with Loot Gaming. Subscribe now by going to lootcrate.com/KFMS and enter code KFMS to save an exclusive 15% off your subscription. Subscribe now by going to lootcrate.com/KFMS and enter code KFMS to save an exclusive 15% off your subscription. Reader mail time. Eddie T. King writes in and says, with the recent release of Spider-Man and God of War within the same year and the fact PlayStation has been crushing it this generation, is it safe to say that we're in the golden age of PlayStation?
It's good times for PlayStation owners, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, I speak as someone who has always had historically a bit more of an affinity for Xbox, largely because I just prefer the controller. And I grew up liking, I'm too old for that, but always enjoyed some of the exclusive Xbox franchises more so than the PlayStation ones. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as someone who now has both systems, I got to say, I play my PlayStation more than the Xbox. Yeah, I really do.
Yeah.
I really do.
I think it's really safe to say that this is the golden age of PlayStation gaming.
Yeah.
Like, it's had some great moments. Obviously, PlayStation 1, so many classic games, especially if you're into JRPGs.
Yeah.
And then moving forward from that, the PlayStation 2, I mean, it is, you know, still the highest selling console of all time.
And it's been a remarkable comeback, because they had, the PlayStation 2 would have been considered the golden age at that time, because they were just like, I don't know how many different games were released PlayStation 2, but it was
insane amount.
A huge amount.
And then PlayStation 3, kind of was
that's where they stumbled.
A misstep a bit. But yeah. I feel like PlayStation 4, they really came back. And in terms of the quality and quantity of exclusive titles available on the system, I don't think that we've ever seen. Well, I know we've never seen something at that level. And I don't know that we ever will again, because this is a really huge success.
Would you not, if somebody came to you and asked you, what console should I get? Would you wouldn't hesitate to recommend a PlayStation over the Xbox?
Definitely. Yeah. And in this day and age, there's just too many.
I gotta say, even I might have to.
Yeah.
Damn.
I know, right? And again, I say that as a quote unquote Xbox, as I've been called in the past.
Yeah.
I still prefer the Xbox controller. I still prefer the Xbox UI and the UX, and I just generally prefer their ecosystem. Mm-hmm. And there definitely are a couple of exclusive Xbox things that I'd be sorry to see go. But yeah, at this point, if I had to hold on to one. Most of the games that I care about are multi-platform anyway. Red Dead's going to be wherever I am.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's Xbox One X has a slight tech advantage. The games
it's
that
not
are gonna,
slight. It's a big one.
Yeah, it's good. The games are going to look. I mean, I'm going to get Red Dead on the Xbox One, no question, because it's going to look better. If you want to play the 4K discs, I still think it's ridiculous that an Xbox PlayStation 4 won't play a 4K disc. It's madness to me.
Stupid.
Makes no sense at all. But yeah, at this point, if someone came to me and said, which one should I get? I'd break it down for them. I'd say, look, if this is important, get this. If that's important, get that. But all things being equal, yeah, at this point, it's probably the PlayStation.
Yeah. I mean, especially if you don't have a PlayStation 4 and you can get, which I was at in London this week at RTX London, and a lot of the Rooster Teeth people I was hanging out with, I mean, they've been Xbox people forever. A lot of them didn't have PlayStation 4s and they bought it for Spider-Man. I was actually surprised.
Oh, that's a system seller.
Totally. But I was surprised by how many people this late in the game still didn't own a PlayStation 4 at all.
Right.
And now they have it, and now they get to go back and Uncharted 4, Last of Us Remastered, because they didn't even have PS3.
I saw
Detroit, God of War. It's crazy.
Oh my God, yeah. Detroit's great. God of War. It's been a really, really terrific year for PlayStation. I think definitely
Horizon.
Horizon. I mean, that was last year, right?
Yeah, but still, I'm just saying.
But
like,
still,
going
like
back,
the last 12 months have been pretty astonishing. I would definitely say, if they gave out this award, I would say PlayStation 4 is probably platform of the year so far. I don't know. Are there any like big platform exclusives yet to come before the end of the year, or is everything multi-platform?
On Xbox?
On either.
Oh, rest of the year.
I think it's like yeah, Call of Duty and Red Dead.
It's
most of the big ones are all the multi-platform ones. But yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of people in my social feed responding to, because obviously the Spider-Man tweets have been off the charts. Everyone's going crazy about the game because it's so good. Everyone's loving it. My wife is addicted to it. My kid is swinging around New York, loving every minute of it. It's just such a great game. Red Dead, we'll have to wait and see about Red Dead. But as of right now, I would say Spider-Man has a good shot for Game of the Year.
Over God of War?
I didn't play enough of God of War to have an intelligent opinion on that. I think that by the end of the year, God of War is probably going to win most of them.
Yeah.
We have to wait and see about Red Dead. I think Spider-Man's going to be in the conversation.
It will. It's definitely in the conversation.
It's going to be a contender. And I saw a lot of people in my social feed saying, to your point, damn, I guess I got to finally buy that PlayStation. It's moving systems, I think.
Yeah, crazy. Saucy Biscuit says, I'm so glad you guys are back together because I've got some Nintendo questions for you guys. The most recent Direct gave us a lot of amazing announcements, but no real context. Will Luigi's Mansion be in a hotel? Will Tom Nook be the main focus of Animal Crossing? I'm excited either way. My real question is, where are the announcements we were expecting? Will we get another Direct this year that focuses on the new Pokemon game, Metroid Prime 4, and more Smash Bros? Would love to hear what you guys think. I wasn't expecting to hear about the next Pokemon game or Metroid Prime 4. In this Direct. I don't think we're going to until next year. I think the closest we'll get is Game Awards. We might see Metroid Prime 4.
Okay.
I think that's a safe bet that Game Awards we're either going to see Metroid Prime 4, Bayonetta 3, or both.
Will there be another Direct this year?
Yes. I think we'll get two more Directs this year.
Okay.
I think that one will be Smash. Really focusing on whatever that other mode is.
Yeah.
Announcing the final characters.
Yeah.
And going in hard on that one last time. And then I imagine that we'll get another kind of holiday update Direct.
You don't think they'll do like something Pokemon centric? I mean, that's their biggest thing.
Well, yeah, Pokemon's coming in November. Yeah, there might be a Pokemon Direct.
I mean, there's a lot there. They've got the hardware bundle. They've got the Pokeball controller. They've got the two different versions of the games.
About it all. Like all that. I don't know, but they haven't shown
that much of Pokemon Let's Go, have they?
They have. They've been releasing a lot of trailers.
Okay.
That's the type of game that they'll obviously give a huge push, but I don't think that there's much more that needs to be revealed about it. Like,
right.
We kind of know what the game is at this point.
Right. It's a Pokemon game.
Yeah. But with Let's Go features that have already been pretty much well explained. So
okay.
We'll see. Yeah, I loved the Direct, though.
I thought the Direct was good. I saw some people complaining about, like, I was like, what, really? Seems to me like they announced a lot of good stuff.
Yeah, people will always complain. It makes sense.
Did you? What did you think of that that Star Fox title that they unveiled?
Well, they didn't unveil it. That's Starlink, the Ubisoft game?
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's not Star Fox?
It's not. No.
But they were using Star Fox references in it. I'm confused now.
Starlink was revealed... not this E3, but last E3.
Okay.
It's a Ubisoft game that it's like Toys to Life. You buy these little ships and you can use them.
Right.
And it's a Star Fox type game. At Ubisoft's conference this year at E3, they revealed that Star Fox is playable and that you can get the R-Wing as a ship in it.
Right.
And then at this Direct, they showed that Star Wolf is in it and that there's actually a lot more Star Fox presence in the game than people anticipated.
So it's not
a Star Fox game.
But it's got Star Fox elements.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, which makes the game relevant to people.
I do have to give props to Nintendo for the way they ended that Direct. I thought it was the most brilliant kind of like one more thing.
I loved it.
Such a great bait and switch. You go to Animal Crossing. Oh my God! Animal Crossing! Mm-hmm. Animal Crossing is coming to the Switch. But wait, hold on. No, we're just going to announce that Isabelle is going to be in Smash Brothers. And you kind of go... Oh, okay. Well, I guess that's cool, but at the same time, I really wanted Animal Crossing Switch.
And then boom.
But wait, no, you're getting Animal Crossing Switch as well. Brilliant.
I thought a lot of people, or I heard a lot of people saying that like it kind of killed the hype for both announcements. And I'm like, you guys are crazy. They gave us something different.
It made it more than the sum of its parts. Totally. I thought they did it brilliantly.
Yeah,
I love the way they handled that.
I totally agree. All right, time to squad up. Ryan T from Tennessee writes in, his gamer tag is One Last Word. He's playing on PC and Xbox. With Sea of Thieves Forsaken Shores coming out on the 27th, I'm still working to level up and get my sea legs back. So if anyone wants to try out the game or join a fellow sailor, let's team up.
Maybe I'm missing something and it's popular under the radar, but is it just me or does it feel like Sea of Thieves kind of came and went?
People are playing it. It's one of those games that's not this like massive hit, but it's definitely.
But it seemed like that's what they were positioning it to be.
I think it qualifies as a success.
Okay.
For them.
Okay.
Like, just from the amount of concurrence they have and the amount of people that are playing the game and talking about the game.
I mean, they're supporting it. Here's some DLC.
Yeah. Now it's time for You're Wrong. Let's see what we got wrong today. Dennis Lofgren writes in and says, Tim's description of the difference between the 4-3 and Pixel Perfect modes was a bit confusing. In Pixel Perfect mode, every pixel is a perfect square. 4-3 takes that and stretches it to a 4-3 aspect ratio. 4-3 is how it looked back in the days on CRTs, and some devs designed with it in mind. Pixel Perfect mode exists because the stretching in 4-3 mode. It's ultimately a taste thing, though. I personally prefer the Pixel Perfect mode. Thank you. That's a
I need to try because I was playing in 4:3 yesterday. I need to try Pixel Perfect.
Makes it really tiny, though. I don't like that.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because it has to be a square.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Kebabs writes in and says, a bit of history. The DualShock had a predecessor in April 1997 called the Dual Analog, featuring analog sticks, longer handles, and concave sticks like the PlayStation 4 controllers. The DualShock arrived in November 97 and became the standard design for PS2 and 3. Interesting. He also says Ape Escape was the only PlayStation 1 game to require the dual analog controller.
What else you got?
Kebab says the Capcom Vancouver closure was covered on yesterday's show. No complaints talking about it again, though. Most of the members have moved over to EA Vancouver, who makes EA's major sports titles. That's good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that people have landed on their feet.
Dead Capitalist Pig says Dead Rising. The last Dead Rising was not released along the launch of Xbox One, which was Dead Rising 3. It was Dead Rising 4 that came to us on December 6, 2016 for Xbox One and December 5th, 2017 for PS4. Interesting.
Oh, look at that thing. Kevin's pulled it up. That, I mean, that looks more like a flight stick.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird.
That was a real thing?
I don't know that this is what they were talking about.
I don't know. I don't think that is. But I've never seen that thing before.
While I was looking at it, I thought it was interesting and you guys would get a kick out of it.
I mean, that feels like that's I mean, you know, you got the you got the throttle thing and all kinds of weird stuff going on there.
Alex Del Mingo writes in and says, Hover has more threads to the original Jet Set Radio than you think. The original game's composer, Hideki Naganuma, contributed a couple tracks to the soundtrack. You should check out the theme song composed by him, Heaven Up. I guarantee it slaps.
Oh, so there's a very, very clearly an homage to Jet Set Radio.
Mm-hmm. Kebabs writes in, says, two breaking news items courtesy of IGN. Castlevania Symphony of the Night and Rondo of Blood are seemingly coming to PlayStation 4. That's awesome. Hey. And two, the Korean ratings board leaks PUBG for PlayStation 4.
I think we always suspected that was coming, right?
I don't know. I thought that the kibosh got put on that a while back.
I mean, that's I think I don't know enough about it to know, but I always assumed that their deal with Xbox was a timed deal and that at some point that would elapse and it would be able to come to other platforms.
Yeah. I always assumed that as well.
And what Kevin or Kebabs writes in and says, what Kevin showed isn't the dual analog controller, but it is Sony's first controller with analog capability.
Yeah,
ha
he's
ha.
Quick.
He's good, man. He's good. Thank you guys so much. Tomorrow, it's going to be me and Brandon Jones from Easy Allies. That's very exciting. But until then, I'm happy to be back and I love you.